God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, the Symbol Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to newcomers. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone number to the newcomer privately. Any newcomers? Tough crowd. The AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step four. We're on our part two of step four. And please welcome our panel this evening. We have Hillary from Powhatan and Claire from Richmond. I will read the first paragraph that begins on page, where is it? The first paragraph that begins on page 67. And again, this is step four, part two. And then the panel will share for a few minutes. Each member of the panel will share for a few minutes on the reading. And let me put this up on the screen. Item one. Page 67, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mr. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances, which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Okay, Hillary?
I'm Hillary. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Hillary.
So when I did my inventory, one of the things that was like really glaring, which I guess you all probably addressed last week, was like the self-seeking, how much I thought everyone, or how much I cared about what everyone else thought about me, which was its own kind of fear. But then, yeah, to see like how basically everything on my inventory, like the root of it was fear and what a scared person I was all the time. And I remember, like, I didn't know that that's what it was, but I like during drinking and like even early sobriety, like anxiety was like my only emotion. Like everything manifested as an anxiety because I was just so afraid of getting things right, getting things wrong, like losing things, people, just everything. And so I even remember that in early sobriety. So my story is not the whole thing, obviously, but my shorter version is that I put down the drink 9 months before I had my sobriety date, basically. And so for those 9 months, I was like white knuckling it. I didn't have a solution. And I was going to therapy and that was helpful and whatnot, but I was just waking up every morning with this impending sense of doom, which like really, I think hits home that like the fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Like even once the alcohol was removed, I wasn't like sober at this time. I was like using other substances to like make do. But even with the alcohol removed, like because I had done no step work and I still like had this gaping God-shaped hole in me, I was just consumed with fear, even without the alcohol. And so that you can't live like that. And it got to the point where my therapist was even like, yeah, like you got to do something different. You should go try AA. And this is the second time she had suggested it to me. So I came into the rooms of AA and heard a woman share like a similar experience where she had like separated herself from alcohol for a brief period of time. But then she got to that point where her head was so busy with the fear that she could no longer like go on like that. So it was accept spiritual help or like go back to drinking. And that's the point that I had gotten to. And, you know, in my book where it says sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. My sponsor had me write, it robs us of peace. And like peace was a non-existent word in my life at that time. And that's what fear had done. It had robbed me of many things, but mostly of that peace and serenity that I have found in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the other thing where it said, in set in motion trains of circumstance, which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? And my first fear inventory was lengthy. I mean, I had everything on there, like fear of not being a wife or not being a good wife, fear of never becoming a mother, fear of snakes, natural disaster. Like it was anything and everything, you know? And I meant to get it out before the meeting tonight, but I think it's something like half of those fears were eliminated just by like coming into the program, because some of those fears were things like STDs. And like when you stop sleeping around because you're drinking so much, like that no longer has to be a fear on your fear list because your behavior changes. And so that was like when I was working the steps and got to see that just like those minor behavior changes made a significant difference in like my level of fear on a daily basis, because I had set those things in motion. Like I had caused chaos, unnecessary chaos that was going to stir up all this fear. So that was just really, you know, we like immediate results. And so that was good for me on an inventory to be like, oh, wait, I don't have to be afraid of this anymore because I don't live that way currently. And then those other fears, like the bigger things of like not being able to like have children or be a good wife, like it depends on the day, on the good wife thing. But like I have had the privilege of becoming a mother and like, but I would have missed out on all those things, even if I got to experience them, because it would have all been clouded with fear. So I'm so glad that before having those experiences, I was able to work through my fourth step so that I could really enjoy those things when they did come about in my life. And I'll pass.
Okay, Claire.
Hey, everybody. My name's Claire. I'm an alcoholic. I am from Richmond, Virginia. My sobriety date is March 13th of this year. And I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and I have a home group. And, you know, I'm just doing my best to live life every day, day by day. I'm about to hit 9 months, so I'm pretty excited about that. And I appreciate you asking me to be here tonight. I think bear with me. My nerves are like definitely pretty high tonight, but I'm so happy to be here. I was meditating a little bit on fear this afternoon. And so I got out my big book dictionary. And sometimes I just like going to the big book dictionary to sort of remind myself about what exactly it is, like the nuts and bolts of what we're talking about. You know, and in the dictionary, it says agitation, alarm, anxiety, or dismay in the anticipation of or in the presence of danger, pain, or disaster. And I was thinking about a time in my life when like my drinking really sort of took on this new meaning, and when like I was so afraid of everything, the only thing I could do to quiet that fear was to drink. And I was living on my own out in Colorado, and it just like the fear was so immense that it was really when I moved from like having some glasses of wine or like having a big party night. I mean, my drinking career spanned almost 20 years, but it really took a turn. Like I needed like bottles to like quiet the voices and to calm down that fear of like, I'm being chased. Someone's going to get me. I'm all alone. No one's here to protect me. And, you know, it wasn't until I really started, and when it talks about touching every aspect of our lives, it really touched every aspect of my life. Like the only time I wasn't afraid was when I was working and surrounded by other people. But then this weird thing happened where like the drinking took over and I was always by myself when I wasn't at work. So I was always terrified. And I just became like a shadow of the person that I had been before. Like I lost the confidence that I had had, and I lost a little bit of my drive, and I second guessed everything that I did. And, you know, I never really truly understood the depths of what I was doing to myself until I started putting pen to paper with myself and really being truthful and honest with myself. Because when I came into the room 9 months ago, I was terrified. Like I was at a crossroads. I was going to lose my family and I was going to lose the life and any chance at maintaining a semblance of a family that I have. I have two young children and a husband who, by the grace of, you know, my creator and the goddess and God and spirit, are standing by my side today. I was terrified. Like, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose everything. So as a result, for like, still to this day, I keep my head down. I put my foot on the pedal and I do the work. I do everything that I am told to do by my sponsor. I say yes as often as I can. And I know that if I do become afraid, or I do question things, or I hear like the voices creeping back up in my head, I know really all I have to do is like stop, take a minute, catch my breath, pray, call my sponsor, call a friend, and it's like probably gonna be okay, you know? So without that tool of knowing, like sometimes you just have to get these things out, even your deepest, darkest fears and demons, you won't ever really truly know the freedom that exists that can come to you in such a short period of time. And I think day by day, bit by bit, you know, the more I exposed myself, the more I truly able was to see that there is a potential for a life, like, you know, that feels worth living, where I can be happy and people want to be around me and people trust me and people don't like look the other way and run when Claire's coming down the street because her hair is crazy and she's screaming and she's driving all over the road. So yeah, I think that's what I got for that. Thanks.
Thank you, Claire. I'll go ahead and put up the next section. Section 2, page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite self. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as he think he would, as we do, that we do as we think he would have us, while I was messing that up, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Okay, Hillary?
So this is one of my favorite parts of the big book, and it's something that I refer people to, especially sponsees, on a regular basis, because it's something that when I was like in an extreme sort of fear, and I don't even remember what it was about, but just one of those times I was paralyzed with fear, and somebody referred me to these two paragraphs, and I got down to the end and I saw, we asked him to remove our fears and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commenced to outgrow fear. And like I said earlier, like I want instant results. Like I want to that immediate relief. And that's what it says, like that this will do if we do those things, if we turn our thoughts to God, ask him to remove our fears, like we will at once commence to outgrow fear. And that has been my experience with this. And I know, like, if you haven't had this experience, it seems like a really extreme claim. But it has been so powerful for me, because I have found myself in sobriety in those just all consuming times where I just can't escape my own thoughts. And if I take the time to just sit and read this, it reminds me like that I do have a solution, and that there is something bigger than whatever those fears are that are taking over my day or my life in general. So yeah, when people call me and they're just like frantic and they don't know what to do, I say like, let's go to page 68 and take a look at these two paragraphs. And I love like when I do that, when we say, perhaps there's a better way. We think so, you know, like when you get somebody in that panic state, it's like, that's no way to live. I've done it before and it was miserable, and I don't want to live that way. I want to try this better way. And the reminder that like we trust infinite God rather than our finite selves, because when I get into that place of fear, I start to feel responsible, and that like I should be able to take care of all this stuff. And to be reminded like that's not my job. It never has been. It's not never going to be. Like my power is limited, and so I've got to turn this over to something bigger than me, because I can't handle this. And the reminder too, I have underlined paradoxically, it is the way of strength. Faith means courage. Because you know, like there were times in drinking and like in my spiritual journey before AA where I kind of frowned upon religion, or, you know, was like, thought of it as a weak thing, or, you know, was just really judgy of that stuff. And to be reminded, like the bravest, most courageous thing that I can do on a daily basis is trust God. And like, that used to be such a daunting thought to me. But now it's such a relief. Like that's the bravest thing I can do. Like I can handle that. Like some days I like to be stubborn about it. But if I just trust that, like, the thing that has gotten me this far will continue to do that, like that's super courageous of me. And I used to have like these really elaborate ideas of what courage was. And like, I've always like thought that I need to go like dedicate my life to the Peace Corps or whatever, but it's like, no, Hillary, you just need to trust God. Like, that's really all we're asking here. So yeah, like I said, I love this part because it's really centering to me, and it has helped me walk through a lot of fear and sobriety.
Okay, Claire?
Yeah, perhaps there's a better way. We think so. I pretty much think so right now. I mean, like there, I was out of options, right? I have a very strong spiritual practice that the past 10 years had basically gone completely silent and dormant. Like I couldn't even listen to the information that was trying to get to me because I was so clouded with the amount of alcohol that I was ingesting on. And you know, that was a place of a lot of shame for me. Like I sat in a lot of shame around that, especially inside of my community. And, I tried to overcompensate for that, for like pretending like I was really dialed in, but I really wasn't. I was just, pretending. So, you know, when I was given this gift, of sobriety, I realized that this was a chance for me to get my relationship with God, with the goddess, with my creator, and with the universe back into shape. It wasn't just about like getting my body back or my mind back. It was about getting, you know, my spiritual self back. And I think because I had been covering that up for so long, it's, you know, I'm still to this day really trying to like peel back, you know, the layers that I like, the armor that I put around myself to kind of like protect myself and keep people out. And I'm chipping away at it bit by bit, day by day, but I can say without a doubt that in the moments of when I'm questioning like my next move or you know, wondering how I should handle things, and I step out of the way and I just let things be, you know, it's not always easy. But I'll tell you what, it is way more magical than anything I've ever witnessed in my life to see those things happen. Right. And it opens you up to just a whole new level of understanding, a new frequency that I honestly never really thought existed. And I'm like just beginning to scratch the surface on it. Right. Because things are still so new and I'm still learning so much about myself and, you know, what my place in this world. I mean, you know, obviously my place in this world, I'm still supposed to be here. Right. Because I could not be here. It was a matter of life and death for me. And I think sometimes when I've struggled, you know, I've been struggling a lot the past couple of weeks. You know, I know, you know, if I decide to like go the other direction, like that's my life. Right. And so like, that's terrifying to me. So I just really, I'm constantly clinging to that and, you know, like apologizing and never apologizing. I think, you know, in some ways I was on like a lifelong apology tour, like always making excuses for myself. And I'm so sorry. And I'm just not going to do that anymore. Like I'm here to be me. Like I've got this new opportunity, like just to like live my life again. And I could not do that without this program, without my creator, and without like, it is a freaking miracle, you guys, that I'm even here. So I try my best to get out of the way as often as I can. And that's what I got on this one. Thanks.
Thanks, Claire. All right. I will put up the next section. Section 3, page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions run to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Okay, Hillary?
Well, I don't know how much I'm going to have to say about this, but I'll do my best. We all have sex problems. I do agree with that. Drinking and in sobriety, it's there. So I wish that there was somebody that did the sex inventory. Like we read this at my old home group, and he did the best just talk on the sex inventory that I ever heard. And I'm not going to steal it from him, but I will like share a few things that I heard from him in that. I had to take a really honest look at my relationship with sex and the misconceptions I had about it, or just like there was a lot of delusion, I guess, in my sex life. You know, and I had a lot of motives that were not helpful to anyone involved. So I just had to really look at that and see how I was using sex basically to get what I wanted or to like control what people thought about me. And that can be very hard and painful to look at. The thing that I think the guy that I was talking about was so helpful with is that as a sponsor going through this with someone, like my opinion is not useful. Like there's no room for my opinion when going through a sex inventory with someone, because that's not what this is about. It's helping, we're trying to help people like establish their sex ideal between them and God. And that's something that has been really uncomfortable, but really important for my sex life, is inviting God into my sex life to pray about sex, which is something that I would never have done prior to sobriety. Because sex was an area of my life that was like cut off from God. That was too intimate. And it was like none of God's business. And like God probably wouldn't have approved of my sex life, like my old idea of God, when I was drinking. But like now my relationship with God is like, God knows it all. Like God's okay with it all. He doesn't care. There are places in my sex life that I had to ask for forgiveness that I was really stubborn about. When my sponsor like asked me to ask for forgiveness from God, I was like, hold up. Like, I don't think I need to be forgiven for that. And she said to me, like, you don't know what you need to be forgiven about. Like, all you have to do is ask for the forgiveness and God gets to decide. Like,
I think we may have lost Hillary for a second. Claire, would you like to go ahead and
what's
jump
forgiveness?
In?
So yeah, I think that's all I've got.
All right. Thanks, Hillary.
Hi again. This is, you know, this is definitely, it's complicated. Certainly for me, like when I knew that like this was going to be an aspect of inventory, I was like, well, this is going to be a problem. Like this is going to be real rough. You know, you, cause you've got to be brutally honest with yourself. And I, you know, had a very varied and dynamic history, and there's a lot of shame and guilt and a very extensive piece of trauma that happened around a lot of this. And, you know, as a result, after that trauma, there were a lot of, you know, I got to the point where my, you know, and if I'm being honest, like the sex wasn't happening without alcohol, right? So like that was that became a crutch as well, you know, and being honest about that in sobriety and with, you know, inside the safety of my friendship with my sponsor, and then, you know, being honest about it with my husband. Man, it's been, you know, it's been a journey. But it's been healing, because I know that it's what Hillary said, what we're working for is like, what is the ideal going to be? Like, where are we trying to get? What do you want it to? And you know, the amazing thing about that is that you can dream the biggest dream that you want, right? Like it's a way for you, if you do have some type of trauma in your past, where you can like figure out a way to heal around things and not have it be this, you know, sadness and darkness that really, like, for me, it was like the darkness just really took over. And then I was like, not even present for like a really long time. And, you know, how sad that made me, and how sad for, you know, how much shame I had around that. You know, putting my husband through all of that too. It's like, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to look in the mirror and to really, you know, I guess ultimately it's true. Like we all do have problems, and it doesn't matter if you're like sober or not sober or whatever. It's just, it can be a very complicated aspect of what it means to be like a spiritual being on this planet. And, you know, my hope is that one day it can be like a, this dream that I am trying to weave right now, you know, inside of this new life. It's like, what can we do about it? We can do something about it. Like, if you don't want to do anything about it, don't do anything about it, and nothing's ever going to get better, right? But you can do something about it if you're willing to do the work. And like, sometimes that involves pushing yourself, right? And like doing things that aren't comfortable. Like, I'm sorry, but a lot of my sobriety has been like having to do some stuff that doesn't really feel very comfortable, but I'm going to do it anyway, because this is going to work, right? Like, this is it. This is my chance. So anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Claire. I'll go ahead and put the next reading up. Section 4. Page 69, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loved. Okay, Hillary?
So yeah, the word selfish is just really sticking out to me in this, and that like that is essentially what came out of my sexual behavior. You know, just like trying to get what I wanted. And in doing so, I did hurt a lot of people. But then there was the dishonesty, like in an attempt to not hurt somebody, like what lies can I tell to like cover this up so that nobody gets hurt. And then everyone ended up getting more hurt. And so having to really look at that. But there were like some things on my inventory that somebody that used to be in the Richmond area. I think she used to be over in y'all's area too. So it might sound familiar, but she'd say like, we're just having sex for fun and for free. And like, there were a few of those people on there, you know? And it was like, who was I like ultimately hurting? And like, it was probably myself. And I remember my sponsor being like, do you think you need to like go? And because ultimately, like, you know, you take everybody and you put it on your 8th step list, not to jump ahead. She was like, do you think you like need to make amends to these people? And I'm like, I think I just need to stay away from these people. I was up to no good with them. And to just like, you know, see like, what were my motives in that? And, you know, like, did anybody get hurt per se? Like, not always in those circumstances, but like, I wasn't doing anything to build my self-esteem, which is what my motive was, like, to do that. Like, it would make me feel like more loved and like,
Hillary, if you can hear me, it might help to stop video on your end. Okay, Claire, would you like to go ahead and go?
Absolutely, no problem. So where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Gosh, when wasn't I selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And hurting people, like I was hurting pretty much everyone. I was so good at arousing jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness in others. I mean, I was like a full-on ringleader of darkness, you know, like I probably had like, you know, a little cracking of the whip. And, you know, I know now that that's not who I was when I was born into this world, into this lifetime. And I know that it was really important for me to take accountability, like to be responsible for the things that I had been doing, because for so long I found ways to justify my actions. Like, well, I'm doing this for that person to like me, or I'm doing this because you know, there was always a reason, and I was always justifying, and I was never wrong. And you know, when it comes to like how I was behaving, my sexual behaviors, it really was like, I was just always in another place. It was dark. I was always, you know, three sheets to the wind. I wasn't paying attention. I always had my guard down, you know, and as a result, you know, like those energies really start building. And, you know, by the time I got here, it was like my relationship was so unhealthy with regards to sex that, you know, there was no place it could go but to start getting better. You know, it's not like we have to get into details or anything, but I'm just so happy that I don't have to live that way anymore. And that by getting it down on paper and by doing my 5th step, it allowed me a freedom to like start getting back to that person that I know that I was born into this world to be. And it's giving me a chance for my husband to get his wife back. And that's, you know, these things take time. I go to as many meetings as I can, and I listen to a lot of speakers, and I've heard a lot of people talk, and I talk to a lot of people. And the one thing I know is that, like, it just takes time. And when I try and like fix things and try and put it into a pretty package and make a beautiful bow, and that, you know, includes your sex life too, like, you're just going to make it worse. Just like, just be patient, and do a little bit, you know, every bit that you can when the opportunity arises. And, you know, I just remain hopefully optimistic that that ideal and that dream, like, are going to come true someday.
Thanks, Claire. Next section, section 5, page 69, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Hillary, are you back with us?
Leave Am us. I? Is it working? Yes.
It is. Okay. It's working.
So I'm just going to back up a little bit into the, our God, sex powers were God-given and therefore good. And I really needed that reminder when I got sober, because after like looking at that inventory and having used alcohol to like engage in a sex life for so long, that got really blurry and muddy, and I don't want to say that sex didn't feel good, but it was like really unnerving territory kind of. And so to have to walk through that in sobriety, and to know that like that it's something that God wants for me, and to be able to like know that it's good, because there were so many things that I associated with sex that were bad. So yeah, like Claire kind of talked about being able to engage in a sex life without the assistance of alcohol was like really tough territory. And so like I talked about earlier, like bringing God into that, which I did, like started out by doing with this ideal. And, when I first wrote my ideal, I had just started dating the man that's now my husband. And I remember my sponsor saying like to set aside everything I know about this person, because that's what I had always done. Like my sex ideal was like whoever was willing to sleep with me, or like whoever was willing to love me. And so left to my own devices without God, I would have just like taken like exhibit A and like copied down all the things, and just like molded my ideal to the person that was in front of me. And so I really had to set those things aside and think about, for the first time in my life, like what, like a partner that God would want me to have would be like. And I had to listen to God about that. And a lot of things came out of that were surprising to me that I didn't even know were important. And so to just like get really honest about that and put that down. And, if you're new, I don't want to ruin this for you, but it's like an important part of my ideal. What my sponsor did was like, once I wrote that, which was really hard to dig all that like truth out and see like what was really going to benefit me in a relationship and help me to grow to be the person that God intended me to be. Then my sponsor was like, okay, so that's what you think that you should get out of a relationship. Those are actually the things that you need to bring to a relationship. And I was like, oh, like now that list looks even like harder to fulfill, you know? Because I'm all about getting things out of a relationship. But when I have to bring something to the table, like that's another story. So to like, to know that, like, if I was going to expect honesty, then I had to bring honesty. If I was going to like, expect, you know, open communication or whatever it may be, like, I had to be willing to bring those things, which like required a whole nother level of vulnerability. And to me, it says like, counsel with other persons is often desirable, but God will be the final judge. It was important for me like to have, take this step, and go over that stuff with another person. Because in my head, things are much bigger and scarier. And in my experiences of working the steps, the people that I have had the privilege of like sharing that with, more often than not say like, that happened to me too, or I've experienced something similar, and to not feel alone in that. But ultimately taking it to God, was where I needed to end up, but I needed to also counsel with other people to kind of lessen the fear that had grown around those issues. Yep.
Okay, Claire.
I just, this first sentence, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. Like when I think about that, like the only, like, how do things grow? You know, they have to grow from a strong, like, foundation. Like either you have to have good dirt, or you've got to have cement, or like, you've got to like build the fabric of the foundation. And for me now, that's honesty, right? Because so much of my, you know, not sober, drunken, drinking life was based on dishonesty, hiding dishonesty, you know, and my sex behavior was the same. You know, I would love to say, I wish I could have been more honest and transparent with my husband about like what was going on, not just like drinking wise, but, you know, how I was feeling about the things that had happened to me in my past and the triggers that I feel and the triggers that I have, right? And I mean, so I'm in the midst of that growing process. And I would venture to guess that like that growth is something that just continues to evolve as time goes on, the more time you get inside the program. And I think inside of that honesty is like the true gift, because, and this is like where the sponsorship piece comes in, I think, because you are able to like truly be honest and forthcoming with this. That's what your fifth step is giving you. Like you've got this chance. So if you don't go the distance and you aren't truthful, you know, it's, I don't know, but it's probably not, you know, gonna go well. From what I've heard in the rooms, like people have to circle back up to the thing that they like didn't say, right? So for me, it was an opportunity for me to really talk out and to really flush out all of the noise, like the hysteria, right? And get real clear and real, you know, just really clear and concise on like what I want that ideal to be, because that's like the foundation, right? So that's the gift of sponsorship inside that, because for me, like that was something I was terrified to like admit, you know, that I hadn't been honest, that I would still have triggers, you know, that I was drinking all the time prior to any type of activity, like whether it be sex or, you know, going to a PTA meeting. So it's been such a gift. And I think that the sponsorship piece or the counsel of others, like what an amazing thing that you can sort of get rid of some of that fear, which is like how we started off the topic of this panel. Like you can be free and you don't have to live your life that way. I don't know if any of that made sense, but anyway.
Thanks, Claire. Okay. And our final reading for this evening, section number 6, page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Okay, Hillary?
My service is being a little iffy again. So just let me know. For me, you know, this Claire kind of addressed it, like it takes time, and this sex thing can be a really good place, you know, and moving right along. And then there are other times where it's an area that I struggle in. Above that, it says the honest desire to let God take us to better things. Like, I have that honest desire now. And what that does for me is that when there's a questionable situation, I am quick to like report that. I have developed relationships in this program where I can tell the like what seem to be the scariest things to me to these women in the program. And that those are like the sneakiest, subtlest thoughts. It's not usually about alcohol. It's like about a coworker or about like somebody I saw at the gym, you know? And I have that honest desire for God to take me to better things that I can't even let that thought cross my mind and put it away and say, you know what, we're not going to worry about that. It was just the thought. I have to pick up the phone because like I value my marriage so much today, and I know that it's something that God has given me, and I don't take that for granted. So there have been times like where like thoughts have crossed my mind, and I have to check in like and cannot be left alone with those because I know how subtle and baffling and powerful this cunning, baffling and powerful, but subtle this disease is. And it won't always come as like, maybe I should take a drink, you know. It will start as something else, and then, you know, I'll get myself into trouble and then need a drink to escape that, you know. So I just am, you know, when it comes to sex, like that is an area like when we talk about rigorously honest, like emphasis on the rigorous, because it's not an area where I can be gray with my honesty. There's not really anywhere you can be gray with your honesty, but it's definitely not an area you can be gray with your honesty. And so, yeah, like that, I try to, you know, hold myself accountable for those things so that I can show up as like the wife that God would have me be. And I mean, it's one of those things that like when I see the transformation that God has made in that area of my life, when it says like, we hope you are convinced that God can remove whatever self-will blocked you from Him. Like it's an area of my life where I can see such growth that it, you know, it allows me to have that courage to like.
Shoot, I know that's frustrating. I'm hoping she'll come back any second. Claire, would you like to go ahead and jump in?
Shoot.
I know. Hopefully Hillary will come back on in a second. She can finish.
I think the big that like in these last few paragraphs is that if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. Pretty troublesome. And yep, I have thrown myself harder into helping others. Like I knew, you know, I thought maybe like things were going to get better. And like I was saying before, it just takes time. So while this, you know, while this aspect of my life is growing and it's, you know, getting nourished, I'm going to get busy, right? Because if I just sit around and I'm idle, it's not going to go anyplace good real quick, right? So being of service and helping other people, not just inside of AA, but just helping people in general, brings me a lot of joy and it makes me happy. And so like that happiness bubble builds, and then I find myself having more capacity to have the honest conversations and open myself up a little bit more and be more receptive to really building that relationship with my husband. That was the thing that was unnourished. You know, it was the little plant, you know, in the closet that just like never got any light, right? And now like I'm bringing that plant back out, trying to give it some fertilizer and like get it growing again, right? But it was in the darkness for a really long time, and it's not going to happen in the blink of an eye. And you know, I certainly don't need any convincing. I feel like I am able to live a life now, like of truth and honesty. And I'm not good at it all the time, but I, you know, sometimes I hear myself speaking, or I'm like, really truly listening to my husband, because it's not just about like the sexual behavior, right? Like it's also about this like love and this aspect of this relationship that I have in my life that I'm trying to nurture again. And I just, it's like amazing, right? We never used to listen to each other. We always used to fight. We were always mad at each other. And now it's like, we have this thing. And sometimes I'm like looking at him and we're talking, and I'm like, wow, this is like amazing. Should have done this a long time ago. But anyway, it's getting close to 8 o'clock. Thank you so much for asking me. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Claire. And I'm glad to see Hillary back on. Hillary, would you like to say a few more words to finish up your portion?
I think I'm good. Thank you, though.
I'm glad you could get back on, though. All right. Well, thank you both. Thank you both. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap this meeting up. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you both for sharing your experience and strength and hope tonight. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? I see Aaliyah's hand up. Okay, Aaliyah.
Good evening, family. My name is Aaliyah, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group, AA 101, we will be meeting for our gratitude breakfast January 2nd. It will be at Norfolk General in the Heart Hospital. We can no longer use the back door, so we are going the normal route past the receptionist. There will be people standing out to guide and direct everyone to the meeting. But January 2nd, gratitude breakfast. Please come join us.
All right. Thanks, Aaliyah. Back at Norfolk General, like old time. That's great. Any other announcements? Not seeing any other hands raised. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. And home group members, raise your hand. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Well, we just had a major problem. Okay, folks, I'm not sure what just happened there. The system logged me out. If you were able to hear me, I was talking about our sponsorship question. Anybody who would like additional information about sponsorship, please hang out after the meeting, or you can email info@simpleactions.net. And in closing, and I will ask everybody to thank the panel again for their sharing tonight. And we'll unmute, or Morgan, if you can unmute everybody before the Lord's Prayer, we'll have one big discombobulated, confusing Lord's Prayer, and then everybody will have a chance to say thank you.
Everybody should be able to unmute if they would like.
Okay, let's go ahead with the Lord's Prayer. Who keeps us sober?
Our Father.
Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. forever and ever and ever. Amen.